On the Virtual Bible Study tonight, we want to talk about work. It's not a popular topic in our society today, but it is a topic that the Scriptures speak extensively about. What about work? Is it something that's good? Is it part of the first curse, back in Genesis chapter 3, when man fell and God cursed man? Was work part of that curse? Or is it something that's good and designed by God? We'll talk about work on the Virtual Bible Study tonight. Don't go anywhere. We'll get started right after this.
It's time for this week's edition of the Virtual Bible Study. The Virtual Bible Study is a live, internet-only call-in program dedicated to the honest study and discussion of God's Word. Do you have a question about something in the Bible? Or are you simply interested in learning more about the Scriptures? If so, we hope you'll stay tuned tonight as we look into the pages of God's Word. The Virtual Bible Study is brought to you this time each week by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. You can participate in the discussion tonight by calling 931-381-4567 or by emailing your questions or comments from collegeview.com. We hope you'll take out your Bibles and study along with us as we begin an exciting study of God's Word on this edition of the Virtual Bible Study.
And welcome to the Virtual Bible Study for Thursday, June 8th, 2017. We're glad you're a part of the program tonight. My name is Jacob Gwynn. My father, Greg Gwynn, is out of town preaching tonight. In his absence, I've got a powerhouse with me here tonight. Monty Overton's in my father's seat. Welcome to the program, Monty.
Thank you, Jacob. But the other one's the powerhouse.
Well, both of you are. It's a tag team. And Josh McCord is here as well. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Good to
be here. And behind the controls, Kyle is here again tonight. Kyle, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
2 weeks in a row. You ought to be on the top of your game tonight.
Yep, I should be.
We'll look forward to hearing from you as well. 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeview.com. We're not on Facebook tonight, having some problems with Facebook, but if you're watching us from our website, you can still sign in the chat room with other listeners there and share your comments via the chat room. We'll look forward to hearing from you on the program tonight. And if you need a bumper sticker, talked to some folks earlier this week and saying they needed to get a bumper sticker, it's very easy to do that. You send an email with your snail mail address to questions@collegeview.com. We'll get a free bumper sticker in the mail to you and help you spread the word about the Virtual Bible Study. And for those who have those bumper stickers and driving around, wherever you may be, wherever in the world you are, thank you for helping us get that word out. All right, thanks for joining us on the program tonight. And, work is something, Monty, that's not looked upon favorably in our society today.
Yeah, most people in our society, they think work is one of those four-letter words we're not supposed to say.
It is a four-letter word.
Yeah, but I think they equate it with some of the others that we're not going to say.
All right.
But they look at it like it's a dirty word, and they do everything they can to get out of it. But I think as we study through our study tonight, we'll see that we should probably have a different attitude about it.
All right. And, Josh, I guess in our society today, those who have to work are sort of viewed as the less fortunate ones, those that, they have, the poor folks had to work.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that I know of that work harder at getting out of doing work than they do to just actually do the job. Task at hand.
Well, you're in human resources in your day job, and I'm sure you come in contact with folks all the time who view work as something that's real bad.
Sure, yeah, there's a minority of people there that are trying to get out of doing work and want to put the work off on others, but I think it's just a mindset that our culture has started to develop. You know, we don't want to have to work. I'd rather just not do anything and just have it come to me, but that's not the way that God intended it at all.
All right. 877-381-4567. What do you think about work? How does our society view it? The problem with our society is that it can begin to influence us if we're not careful. Romans chapter 12, we know it reminds us of the danger of that. It tells us not to be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove whether it is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The conforming process of the world, Monty, it's a gradual process, and the devil uses those in our society who are living wicked lives to transform us, or to conform us, rather, to an image that's not acceptable to God. And he does that by trying to get us to think like the world, get our attitudes like the world, and we can very easily slip into it in this area of work.
You know, we're constantly bombarded with, we'll use the term negative information from the devil and the way he tries to get us to conform. Everywhere we go, we see people, like we talked about, trying to do things to get out of work, trying to act like work's a bad thing. And not just work, but every moral, spiritual subject we can think of, the devil's just constantly, it's like a drip of water on a stone. one little drip doesn't do anything, but after years of it continual dripping, it erodes a little hole in the stone. And if we're not careful, we're the same way. We let our guard down a little bit, and it erodes us away. And the next thing you know, we've conformed to the world rather than been transformed by the Word.
All right. And so we've got to make sure that our thinking is in line with God's Word. So what does God's Word then tell us about work? Is it, in fact, one of those things that should be avoided, one of those things that's bad? Well, go back to the Garden of Eden, Josh, and we see that in a perfect world, there was work to be done.
Yeah, that's one example that stands out to me so much, that even in a perfect environment that God placed man in, he had responsibility. He had something to do. He had to dress the garden, to tend it, to keep it. And so there was responsibility on him, even in a perfect environment. And so people think, now in a perfect environment, I would just be kicked back. I wouldn't have to do anything.
I'd be on a sandy beach somewhere with my feet up and soaking in the rays.
But the best thing for man, and God knows the best thing for man, the best thing for him was to have responsibility.
To be busy.
Right.
To be industrious. Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, God put man in the garden to dress it and keep it. Certainly some work to be done there. Certainly some responsibility. A perfect world. Work, then, is not a bad thing.
Right.
This is the way God had built us. He could have built us, Monty, as to be totally passive, and where we didn't have to do anything to get the things that we need. Could have made us like a tree.
Heard a famous preacher mention that in his sermon a few days ago, that we could have been made like a tree, and then, the rain's just going to come fall on us, the air's going to blow by us, and we'll soak what we need up out of that, and our feet would be roots in the dirt, and we'll just get what we need out of it, and all we got to do is just manage to stand there.
God made organisms that could live and thrive without doing anything, but he made us, on the other hand, with hands and the ability to work, and he designed us that way, you would say, that he built us to work. We're built that way. It's been said that even lazy people wouldn't have enjoyed the Garden of Eden because there was work there.
Yeah.
And so work is definitely then not a bad thing.
And we don't really know necessarily what was involved in that dressing and keeping. I get the impression, because after they fall, God told him he's going to have to raise his food by the sweat of his brow. So apparently the work that he had to do in the Garden of Eden wasn't as difficult. There weren't weeds and briars and things like that at the time, according to what the scriptures tell us in Genesis there. So, but there was still some kind of work involved in dressing and keeping this perfect garden.
Yeah. Things to be done. Kevin's in the chat room saying that there's some negative commercials on our video feed tonight. We had to go back to the old Ustream tonight, so apologize for the commercials that will be interrupting you as we go. That's the only way we could get out tonight. Someone might say, though, I thought work was part of the curse. Back in Genesis chapter 3, when man fell, Josh, there certainly was some aspect of that in the curse. You want to read that passage for us there in Genesis 3?
Sure. Genesis 3, starting verse 17, says, "And unto Adam he said, Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face thou shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." Yeah, so definitely things changed, and it got a little bit more harsh for man after the fall, and it wasn't going to be as easy, apparently, as it was before, and so there's going to be thorns and thistles to deal with, and we're still dealing with those today.
But it wasn't the work that was the curse.
But it wasn't the work.
It was the difficulty and the conditions. So work is a good thing.
Right.
God made certain aspects of our work difficult and frustrating, but the work itself is a good thing in the way that we were designed. 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeview.com. What do you think in the chat room tonight? What's the attitude of our society toward work? What should be the Christian's attitude towards work? Is it a bad thing? Is it a God-designed thing? Are we, in fact, even blessed with the work and the ability to be industrious? Let us know your thoughts. We're looking forward to hearing from you. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, Monty, we're told that that we're to be working, that we're here to work. It's a part of God's command. Why should we work? We asked that question to our update list earlier today. What are some reasons why Christians should work in their daily lives? Kent from Calhoun, Georgia responded. Thank you, Kent, for your comments tonight. He said, first to the question about whether or not work is part of the curse, he says, "Work is a component part of God's original plan for humanity. We deduce this biblical truth and noting that Adam and Eve had work requirements before they sinned. So it was part of God's design. The way God built us, it is a good thing. And then, why work? Kent's reasons why. He says there's numerous reasons why Christians must work, because God has so commanded, and to be profitable in our society in which we live, to provide a living for ourselves and families, to stay busy enough to keep Satan out of our lives. I like a lot of those comments. The first of those being that it's a command to work. And 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10 highlights that.
It says, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat." So Paul states there that this is a command, that we're supposed to be working. And if we won't do it, we ought not to get to eat. So he doesn't want us to just sit around like the tree and expect things to just come to us. He expects us, God expects us and commands us there that we be busy ourselves with work and in order to provide for our own needs.
All right. And in our society today, though, unfortunately, Josh, it is possible for folks to not work and still eat. A lot of those social safety nets that are detrimental to our society because people aren't fulfilling this command.
Right. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So, you know, God knows what's best for us. He wants us. It sort of ties into a lot of other things. We're supposed to be good stewards of what we have. And so when we work and he blesses us and then we return a portion of that back to him and then we provide for our families, he's doing it for our good. Our good is not to just have others take care of me unless I'm incapable of working. But the right thing for us to do, it's not optional. He wants us to work and provide for ourselves.
All right, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 12 says, "Now then that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ that with quietness they work and eat their own bread." This is to provide for our needs. We've got to be diligent in being industrious. Money?
You know, when we think about it in the New Testament, we read several examples of people that were disabled in one way or another, and it talks about them being taken here or there so that they could beg alms. So even they couldn't do much. They were blind or crippled or whatever. They couldn't do much, but they wasn't expecting people just... They had to go out and get what they needed. They were taken somewhere, or somehow managed to get someplace where people could help them out. Yep. So they had some to contribute some amount of effort themselves into it. And they wasn't like they just sat home and expected people to come bring Kroger carts full of groceries to them.
Yeah. Kyle, I'm sure in your line of work you see it as well, those who dread, hate, and dodge work and view it as some type of curse and want to get out of it. Yet the scriptures are very clear that we need to be working to provide for our needs.
Oh, yes, which I do see it occasionally. But I do know we're supposed to work so that we have enough to give and share to others. And, you know, it's what that's what Ephesians chapter 4 and 28 says. You know, we're supposed to perform with our own hands what is good so we'll have something to share with the one who has need. So we're supposed to strive to work so we can give back, and, you know, it's just the attitude we're supposed to have. So.
That's a good point, Kyle, and we need to get into that. And Kyle or Kent mentioned it in his email, to provide for ourselves and our families, but it's also to provide for those around us who have needs. And you referenced Ephesians 4:28. You got it pulled up there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'll start. It says, "He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with the one who has need."
All right, so it's not that we're going to work so that we can pile up large masses of wealth for ourselves only and hoard it. In fact, we've got an example of that, Monty and the rich fool who piled up for himself and laid back on it and said, "I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry." Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28 tells us that we need to have a giving spirit.
Yeah, we should be generous, because when we stop and think about it, if I have the ability to work and earn a living, it's because God gave me that ability. He created ultimately created the technology that I use to do my work with. I mean, we wouldn't have anything without these blessings from God to begin with. So since I understand that I don't really own anything, I'm just a steward of it for the short time that I'm here, then I need to be generous and help those that have need and do things like that, rather than just saying, "Well, I got mine, you go get yours." I mean, we need to be sharing with it, because there's people that genuinely can't do for themselves, and we need to recognize that and recognize our responsibility to help those people.
And if we have the ability to work, as you mentioned, Monty, maybe I've got enough to provide for my needs, but I've got another God-given obligation to be providing for the needs of others.
That's right.
And so I can't just look at myself and say, "You know, I think I got a big enough bank account. I can sit back on this, eat, drink, and be merry." There's others around me that are going to need the ability, the talents that I have, the ability that I have to help those who are less fortunate.
Hey, and too, and I was thinking in the Old Testament, there was provision made for the ones that were poor. You know, the crops were left, so the people that were working and were gaining for themselves, they were to leave a portion for the ones that were poor. But then the ones that were poor didn't just sit at home and have food brought to them. They had to still go out in the field and gather the food for themselves. So even you see both sides of the coin in the Old Testament as well.
That's a good point about the gleaning there. Right. They still had to do some work themselves.
Right.
All right. 877-381-4567. We're going to get a break. When we get back, we'll get your thoughts. And they're getting some of those nasty ads again in the video feed. We apologize for that tonight. Some technical difficulties that we could not work around. We'll hopefully have those resolved by next week. But in the meantime, we're going to get a break. We'll get your thoughts on the other side. Don't go anywhere. The Virtual Bible Study continues right after this.
Enjoying the Virtual Bible Study? Email a friend during this break and tell them to join in on the discussion. There's more exciting Bible study after this commercial.
I'm Trent Haynes, a member of the College View Church of Christ, with a reminder about the update mailing list for the Virtual Bible Study. Every Thursday shortly after noon, an email message is sent out with information about the topic for discussion on that evening's program. You're invited to start sending feedback and comments that are then included during the broadcast. If you'd like to be added to our update list, just send a message to questions@collegeview.com and put add me to the list in the subject line. That's all there is to it.
Here's some quotes worth pondering. Small deeds done are better than great deeds planned. A weak mind is like a microscope which magnifies trifling things but cannot receive great ones. Better to be alone than in bad company. Man, wish I'd said that.
Use your internet connection for something good. Listen to the Virtual Bible Study every week. Now, back to the program.
We're back on the program tonight as we talk about work and what God tells us about it. You know, the book of Proverbs tells us a lot about work and about being industrious. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6 beginning, tells us to look at the ant. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide oversee her ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come on as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. The proverb writer says there, you don't have to look very far, just look at a little bitty ant, and they're busy working. And we ought to have the same attitude in our lives. We ought to be busy. The idea there, as you look for employees, Josh, self-starter. Mm-hmm. There's a self-starter there, the ant. Doesn't have to be told to get to work. They know what to do, and they go do it.
You know, and it contrasts that with what we might think of as a lazy person. It says a little sleep, a little slumber. When we rise out of your sleep, a little folding of the hands to sleep. And you kind of get the idea of here's this person as well. I know I need to be out doing this or that, but I'm really kind of tired. I need to take a nap. Well, he takes his nap. Well,
I'm too tired now.
I just don't feel good. I've slept too long. Now I ain't got time to get out and do this task, whatever it was. Maybe I can get to it tomorrow or the next day. So, but at the same time, then he contrasts that with the ant. Nobody has to tell the ant to go. He just goes. He knows he's got work to do, and he busies himself about doing it. And nobody has to be constantly watching him. He knows it needs done. He just does it.
He does it. And we see the consequences of not working there.
Yeah, one of the statements I hear a lot of times from the supervisors is, well, you know, that guy, when he's here, he is great. He's a great employee when he's here. He's only here half the time. And so, you know, it seems like even ones that do work, well, they only want to go at it half the time, and that's not going to cut it. For a Christian, then our work ethic ought to be, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there when I'm supposed to be. I'm committed to be there, and I've got to show up. I've got to work. And that's just not the attitude that a lot of people have today.
All right. Proverbs 12, verse 11 says, he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that followeth the vain persons is void of understanding. We're providing for our needs here, and the idea is be industrious. Use the blessings that you've got. Use the land you got in the agrarian society here to make something of it. In our society today, use the talents that you've got, the time and ability that you've got to provide for your needs. We need to be doing that. It's very clear. All right. Any other thoughts? Anything from you behind the board tonight, Kyle? Nothing yet? All right.
No.
Okay. And I want to go back to that comment you made, Kyle, about providing for the needs of others in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28 again. even though I may have my needs provided, there's something else in this equation that I've got to consider, and that's the needs of others. I've got to be working to provide for the needs of others. The scriptures over and over again tell us to be cheerful givers, to be generous givers. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1, beginning, "Cast thy bread upon the waters, and thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth." That idea of throwing bread on the waters, sort of an idea of being somewhat indiscriminate, money, and generous with our giving. You're just throwing it out there. I think that's a good admonition for us all.
You know, there's some people that we see that come and beg, and we're reasonable just begging because they're lazy and don't want to work. But there's other times that we may have a question in our mind, we don't know for sure. Go ahead and help them. Because if they're actually illegitimate and don't really need the help, that's between them and God. That's not my responsibility. My response is to help people that I perceive to have a need and to look for that need. And if they really didn't have a need, if they's really just swindling me, that's not my problem. I don't have to take care of that. That's between them and God. Right. I've done what I was supposed to do.
I think probably, Josh, we could do a better job even in the church with looking out for the needs of others and maybe being a little bit more generous.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we could always do better, but I definitely think that in the church, I think sometimes a pride, sense of pride, we don't want to, if we're on the side that may need the help, we don't want to ask for help. I don't want anybody to know about my problems, what I've got going on. But on the other side of it, when we know that there's a need, I think sometimes we think, well, they could be doing better, and I think we could work on both sides of that.
All right. 877-381-4567. Give us a call tonight. We'd love to hear from you. Philip in the chat room said, "There is physical work we are to provide for our families and such, but we are to be doing spiritual work as well." He mentions Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10, Titus chapter 2, verses 14, then chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and one chapter 1 and chapter 3 of Titus, verses 1 and verse 7. Certainly, Philip, we appreciate those comments. We do need to be busy in spiritual activities, and we'll touch on that a little bit as we get to the end of the program, but we're especially focusing on this, on the physical aspect as well. And we're going to look at the end of the program, Philip, you want to stay tuned, because we're going to look how those are intertwined and linked, the physical as well as the spiritual. We need to be busy working because God commanded it, working to provide for our needs, and working so that we have to give to those who give to others who are in need. And if we're not busy working, we won't be able to do any of those things that God has commanded. But there's also another aspect to this idea of work, Monty, and that is it's very clear from the scriptures that work brings blessings from God.
Well, it does, because for one thing, it keeps us from sitting around being lazy all the time. It gives us something to focus on. And if we're busy and focused on something, then we don't have so much time for the devil to intrude into our lives and affect us in negative ways spiritually. So the work is good for that.
That's what Kent says in his email. He says, to stay busy enough to keep Satan out of our lives. That's a problem. And we'll notice it later on, especially as we go along, but we can mention it now. The widows in 1 Timothy chapter 5, notice that the younger widows were told to marry. Why? Because if they weren't married, they would be idle.
Mm-hmm.
And what would come with the idleness in 1 Timothy 5, verse 11 through 14? They'd become tattlers and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. Idleness is an avenue that Satan can use to cause us to sin. We've known people like that. You look at maybe celebrities or sports stars who have millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. What are their lives like, Josh?
Usually they're miserable.
Miserable. They're and engaged in all kinds of things that are getting them in trouble.
Married and divorced multiple times. And
drug addictions.
Yeah.
Crime. Idleness is an avenue where those things can get into our lives. Being idle, not being busy, is a problem that Christians need to be aware of. Work helps us to avoid that problem.
Yeah, if we're busy and with something that occupies us physically and mentally challenging, then we really don't have time to think about sinful things because we're focused on what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 24, we mentioned it often on the program, tells us that God's commands are for our good always. A general concept there that was true in the Old Testament. We believe it's true as well. And if we believe that, then when God told me to work, then I must understand that it's for my benefit, it's for my blessing, if I follow those commands.
Yeah, that is just the way it has to be. Logically, that's the conclusion we'd come to.
And Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 18, Josh tells us that work provides us an opportunity to enjoy those blessings from God. God has chosen that He's going to bless us through the avenue of our work.
Right. And God created us. He knows us better than we know ourselves, and He knows what is best for us. And so when He tells us that we should work and He'll bless us when we work, we've got to trust Him in that. He knows.
Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18, "Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion." God chooses to bless us through work. He could have chosen that food was just going to fall out of the sky into our lap, that the clothes that we need were going to fall out of the sky, that the electric bill was just going to get paid miraculously. Each said that the way he's going to bless us is by us being working.
You know, when we think about it, when God was having food fall out of the sky for the children of Israel in their wilderness wanderings, in the mornings manna was on the ground, in the afternoon quail was there for them to eat. So they had their bread-type food and their meat-type food delivered to them, so to speak, but it didn't get delivered into the tent. They still had to go out and gather it up, and they was even told how much to gather per person so they would have the right amount. So God, even though when He's blessing us, He doesn't just throw it in our lap for we don't have to do anything for it. We still got to do our part to go get it.
Because there's blessing in mm-hmm. that and the fulfillment of being able to have accomplished something. So God's providing us with the food. God's providing us with the clothing and the shelter. He's doing that through the avenue of the work and being able to be industrious. And so we're blessed as a result. We're blessed from God as a result of work.
You know, we talked about our society and the safety nets that's involved. Typically in the neighborhoods where people are there that don't have to work, they're living in government housing, they get a government check, and all they got to do is just be alive to get all this stuff. Those aren't the more desirable neighborhoods to live in because they've got all this idle time. There's all sorts of maintenance takes place there that they shouldn't be involved in, where if they were busy and had a job, they wouldn't have time for all this other stuff.
All right.
So we can see that just in that example of people that's got everything handed to them, they don't have to work, their lives aren't good, their circumstances aren't good. They would be better off maybe with less stuff, but working for it.
All right, absolutely. And then one of the blessings, we talk on and on about blessings tonight from God. One of the blessings that He gives us as a result of work is a good night's sleep. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 12, "The sleep of a laboring man is sweet." You ever had that kind of sleep, Josh?
I have.
It is sort of rewarding. It's absolutely true there.
Yeah, when we stagger in from a hard day's work and eat our supper and fall on the bed, we're gone, and the alarm gets us up the next morning. We slept good all night long.
Whereas if you'd sat around the house all day, you'd toss and turn all night.
That's right.
And so certainly God is blessing us. Kevin's in the chat room he's from Dallas Tech, on the road in Dallas, Texas tonight. Kevin, thank you for taking time to join us from the road tonight. He references Ephesians 4:28 again. "Let the thief that no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need." And again, a good admonition for us as well. 877-381-4567, questions@collegeview.com. We were built to work. It was in the garden. God knows what's best for us, and that's the way He built us. He designed us to be working, and therefore we need to be working. It's a command from God. It provides for our needs. It helps us to have the ability to care for the need and provide for the needs of others, and it gives us blessings from God. When we get back for the break, we need to ask the question, how should we approach our work? And that's something that I think, Josh, you'll have some comments on from practical experience, how we should be approaching, what the Scriptures say about that. And we've got to get to the question as we go along. Does God just expect this from men? Are men the only ones that are supposed to be working? What about women? You can share your comments in the chat room about that now, so we're ready to get on that. Does God expect women to be working? And can we go farther than that? Can we say children? Should we expect work from children? What about that? Do the Scriptures give us any insight into that? We'll get your thoughts on the other side. Don't go anywhere. The virtual Bible study will continue right after this.
Are you listening? There's going to be a test on this stuff. Stay tuned. The virtual Bible study will be right back after this.
This is Greg Gwynn with this week's bullet point. Many religious groups use a variety of carnal appeals to draw people to their assemblies. For instance, there are suppers and ice cream socials, ball games and entertainment events, and so forth. When asked to justify these activities, they will commonly refer to the episodes where Jesus fed the multitudes. Some have even said, quote, if you first feed a man's body, then you'll have a chance to feed his soul, unquote. Let's see if their reference to Jesus' activities will actually support their practices. There were two separate instances in which Jesus miraculously fed huge crowds of people with small quantities of food. One time there were 5,000 men plus women and children, Matthew 14, Mark 6, Luke 9, John 6. On another occasion, there were 4,000 men plus women and children, Matthew 15, Mark 8. In both of these instances, the people had followed Jesus to hear his marvelous teaching and to see his amazing miracles. There had never been a promise of food to draw them. In fact, both episodes show the people following long distances and for a long time before they were offered food. For example, in Matthew 15, verse 32, we read, quote, then Jesus called his disciples unto him and said, I have compassion on the multitude, because they continue with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat, and I will not send them away fasting, lest they faint in the way. Do you see it? The people were not lured to follow by an offer of food. The food came afterwards as an act of compassion. The people had not come in anticipation of being fed. We have one reference where Jesus suspected that the people did in fact come with the desire to receive food, John 6, beginning verse 22. On that occasion, interestingly, he did not feed them. Those who would use the example of Jesus feeding the multitudes to justify their carnal practices today are simply wrong. That's this week's bullet point. Think about it.
Hey, Mommy. I'm 2 years old. This is the Virtual Bible Study.
Quit checking your email. The commercials are over and the Virtual Bible Study is ready to roll. Take it away, guys.
We're back on the program tonight. Reminding you, this program is brought to you by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. If you've never been to our website, it is thevirtualbiblestudy.com. We encourage you to check it out. You can find past programs there. You can find out more information about the College View Church of Christ. You can find out information about a special series of services we're having this weekend, focusing on singing and some singing instruction. Come and find out more about us at thevirtualbiblestudy.com. Send us an email, questions at College View, if you have any comments at any time about something you've heard, suggestions for future editions of the Virtual Bible Study, or if you'd just like to request one of those free bumper stickers, questions at collegeview.com. Looking for some comments in the chat room tonight as we talk about work and the Christian's attitude towards it. We've seen very clearly God expects us to be working. How then should we be working? Josh, you want to get that started for us?
Sure. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10 says, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave, whither thou goest. So when we work, we should work hard, not just half effort. And really, when we work as a Christian, when we're working, and we're setting an example. We're working really for the Lord when we work. But a lot of people don't do that. They only work when somebody's watching, or they only want to do just a little bit. And if the guy next to me isn't working real hard, well, I'm going to do a little bit less than him. I'm not going to do any more than the next guy, and don't want to work hard.
Well, let's talk about that first point you made about doing it all with all of your might. Imani, you probably were told by your mother, your father, when you're growing up, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right.
Yeah.
Don't do it half-heartedly. Mm-hmm. Don't just throw something together. We need to be diligent in our work.
Well, you know, when we think about our secular work, our employers didn't hire us to do shoddy work.
Right.
They hired us. I'm in manufacturing, so is Josh. Our employers hired us to produce a quality product that they can in turn and sell for a reasonable, fair price. And they can make money, and it's a trickle-down kind of thing. They make money, then we get paid, and we make money. So we're all tied together in this. And so, but we got to think about, what did they hire us to do? They didn't hire me to sit around and do nothing at work or to sneak around to try to avoid work. They hired me to produce a product. And right. So that's an agreement we had to get. I didn't take the job saying, well, you know, I'll come to work, but don't expect me to do anything. You know, I got a stool over there I need to keep tied down. That's not what we were hired for. We was hired to do a particular job, whatever our job is.
Whatever it may be.
With the understanding that this is what I'm expected to produce, and this is what I'm expecting you to pay me for. So if I'm expecting to get paid, I need to take care of my end of the deal. Otherwise, I've been dishonest with them.
And to be doing it, doing a good job at it, absolutely. 877-381-4567. The chat room is a little bit quiet here. You got a job to do in there now. Let's be doing it with all your might. Send in those comments, Tim. You referenced, Josh, the idea of just doing it when other people are looking. Ephesians chapter 6, beginning verse 5, tells us that certainly is not acceptable.
Sure. Yeah. Ephesians 6, verse 5 says, "Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, and singleness of your heart as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free." Yeah, so definitely, that set of verses there tells us that we're working for the Lord when we work. And it's not just, and he sees all the time. So, you know, it's not just when the supervisor, the boss man, is, oh, that's when I got to work, and the rest of the time I'll just kick back. And we should be working whether anybody's looking or not. That shows our character, and that's the kind of character that God wants from us.
All right. We're working, and Kent in his email says we should approach our work as if we were laboring for the Lord. Well, that puts a different perspective on it.
Well, ultimately, we are laboring for the world, for the Lord, because the people we're working for, our employer, our immediate supervisor, may not be a Christian at all. And we may have, by the good example we set in doing our work, create an opportunity to teach him about God, to teach him about Jesus, convert him so that he can go to heaven. If we're slothful and lazy and not doing a good job, we're doing poor quality work, like Josh talked about earlier, when we do bother to show up, and then it's not good work, he's not going to want to be like us. There's not going to be anything in our life that he wants to emulate that he sees a better way of going. So we've got to lead by example, and we've got to be able to talk to people too, but we've got to lead by example. And that example we set might make a difference in somebody else's life.
All right, because we realize that we've got a higher calling, Josh, that we're working for something more than just this life, that we're working for something with eternal reward.
Well, a Christian should be the best employees that there are.
Yep.
You know, I mean, because of the commands from God, because of, we know the reason why we should be working, because we're working for the Lord. So there shouldn't be a better employee than the Christian in the workplace.
All right. I think you probably see folks, though, who do not have this approach. And it's
sure.
It's a habit and a mindset with them.
It is. It is. I could think of several examples right now. You know, if a lot of material comes in and it needs two or three people to go at it, there'll always be the one person that can think, now looks like a good time to sweep the floor and grab a broom and walk away. But that's not how it should be at all. I mean, that's the task that I'm assigned to do. That's the task that they're assigned to do. And so we should just do it, especially because we know that God's watching us.
All right. 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeu.com. Kevin references in the chat room Proverbs 12, verse 24, "The hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor." There certainly are blessings from having initiative and being a diligent hard worker. And again, that's the way God's chosen to, the avenue he's chosen for giving us blessings.
You know, when you see someone at work that is diligent, they're a hard worker, they're staying on top of the job, they're doing their job well, producing a quality product, whatever it might be, that's the kind of person that supervisors looking for to make lead men and to promote them to where they eventually get to the point they ain't having to do the physical labor because they can teach people how to do it and to do a good job of it. So that you're rewarded and blessed by that.
All right.
And typically that outgoing person is the one that winds up getting more raises and making more money.
All right. 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeu.com. Work like you're working for the Lord is the way Kent put it in his email, and certainly is the way that it's expressed in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 5 through 8. Let's talk about another thing that we need to do as we think about our work. We need to be working diligently. We need to be working like we're working for the Lord, not as with eye service as man-pleasers, but diligently working as unto the Lord. We need to do this without murmuring and complaining about our job. And I suppose that is a universal trait that we could find at every workplace across the world today. Folks that are complaining about their job. Ever happened at your workplace, Josh?
Sure, yeah.
It comes to you, probably. You hear the complaints. Monty, you same for you?
It's everywhere I've ever worked.
Everywhere you've ever worked. Oh, the boss is crazy. He's out of his mind. What are they trying to do to us now? We're never going to make it. Lots of complaining, lots of murmuring. Over and over again in the scriptures, we're told not to murmur and complain. And yet we do it so readily on the job.
You know, Philippians 2:14 says, do all things without murmurings and disputings. So when we're complaining and griping about our job all the time, we're violating this command here. We're sinning when we complain about our work.
It is a problem. One of the reasons it's a problem is because our job is a blessing from God. We've talked about that. The fact that we have the ability to work is a blessing from God. There are many folks who don't. That it's a blessing from God to actually be able to work. The result of our work is blessings from God and be able to provide for our needs and supply the needs of others. Why would we then complain against God who's given us those blessings? The Israelites were notorious for that, Monty, as you mentioned, about complaining about the manna, complaining about the quail, complaining about everything. And they were condemned for it. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18, as they're getting ready to go into the promised land, a land that would be flowing with milk and honey. They would be eating from vineyards that they didn't plant and enjoying all the fat of the land. He told them, thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. We ought to be thankful to God that we have the ability to get the blessings that we have, to be able to provide for our needs. Rather than complaining, oh, this job is, nobody ought to have to do this job. Then, you know, I've been cursed to have to work here. We ought to be thankful for our jobs and ability to work.
Well, one thing to think about in the country that we live in especially, nobody's assigned me the work that I do. For whatever reason, I picked the trade, the job that I'm doing. And so nobody's making me do it even now. I could pick a new one if I wanted to. So if it's so bad, instead of murmuring and griping about it, just do something about it. Go find another better job. If you don't like this one, go get another one. The door's open. Make the most of it. And that really ought to be our attitude. And like I say, God, give us the job I've got. I could be like the crippled people or the disabled people that we read about in the New Testament, that all they could do was sit around and beg for somebody for handouts. I don't have to do that. I can go to work. I can do a good day's, honest day's worth of work. I get paid a fair wage for it. And then I can go to the grocery store and get food and the other necessities that I have. So it's really a good process, and I've benefited well from it. So I shouldn't be complaining.
Yeah. We should not complain. We've got to work on this mindset, Josh. Again, I think it is a habit, a mindset, and one that we've got to break ourselves out of.
And people's attitudes haven't really changed. Like you were talking about the children of Israel, when they were under Egyptian bondage, well, they were complaining, and then God let them out of that, and then they got out in the wilderness and then started complaining, and then you just see the process. They never were satisfied, and some people will never be satisfied. But we're supposed to be content with what we've got. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And so when we're working and God's blessing us, we ought to be content with that.
Kyle, you ever see that at your workplace?
Oh, of course. I mean, it's something that I do, especially sometimes the nature of the work that some of the people that are the people that help take care, direct care on patients.
Yeah.
I know you see a lot of that.
I'm going to have to admit, Kyle, there would be times I'd be tempted to complain in your line of work.
Which I
know mean, that when that bedpan is full, you know, that would be a time
when it's over full.
Yeah, I might have to, but you can't complain. You got to be.
No, which I know. I think about which one in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18. It's talks about the servants be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor for its sake of conscience toward God, and a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. So it's, you know. I do have, sometimes you have supervisors you argue with and, not argue with, just have disagreements with and just ways of doing things.
Or maybe a hard taskmaster.
Oh, yeah. So it's just something we got to persevere through.
Have the right attitude. Thank you for that, Kyle. All right. 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeu.com. But I think if we'll understand why we're working, it'll help us have the right attitude toward our work. If we understand I'm doing this because this is what God told me to do, if I'm doing this because it's providing for my needs and it's given me the opportunity to help others, if I'll do this realizing that there's blessings associated with whatever this task or job may be, if I'll keep those things in mind, it's going to be harder for me to complain about what I'm doing Monday morning on the job.
When we keep our eyes on the goal is really what it boils down to.
Yep.
The goal is not what we're doing right now. I mean, our goal is not to get up and go to work, but our goal is the rewards that comes from that work. So if we'll focus on the goal, then what we have to do in between is just a step in a way, a stepping stone to get into that goal. So it's not so bad.
All right. We're going to get our last break. And when we get back, we're going to the top of the hour with a couple more questions. Is work only expected of men? What about women? What about children? Who is expected to be working? And then when we get to the end of the program, we want to ask the question, is our secular work unimportant or insignificant? I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with. You know, well, I'm not a preacher. I got to go do this other work, but I really wish I wasn't doing it. Is my secular work unimportant? We'll get to that on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. We're at the top of the hour right after this.
After these important messages, we'll be back to take your comments. Email them during this break.
I'm Dan Quillen, a member of the College View Church of Christ, with some thoughts about making plans. Have you made any different plans for your spirit and for your service for God? We spend time prioritizing personal lives and setting goals in our careers, but do we think in those terms about the most important thing, our soul? Ask yourself these questions. What am I planning to do for God today? In the coming week, what good thoughts will I accomplish for Him? At this time next year, where do I want to be in my spiritual life? In 5 years from now, how will I have changed, improved, and grown in my work for God? 10 years from today, how will my family be? How will I have helped them grow spiritually? 20 years down the road, how will I be doing? As I approach death, what will have been the most important things in my life? Where will I be in eternity?
We're tracking the trends on the virtual Bible study. According to a new Gallup survey, a record number of Americans now consider as morally acceptable many behaviors that the Bible condemns. For instance, sex between an unmarried man and woman, 69% believe that is morally acceptable. Gay or lesbian relations, 63% acceptable. Having a baby outside of wedlock, 62% acceptable. Medical research using stem cells obtained from human embryos, 61% find that morally acceptable. Doctor-assisted suicide, 57% acceptable. Abortion, 43% find it morally acceptable. Pornography, 36% acceptable. Sex between teenagers, 36% see it as morally acceptable. Suicide, 18% acceptable. Polygamy, 17% acceptable. Married men and women having an affair, 9% see it as morally acceptable. That information is via the Gospel Coalition. The Word of God says in 2 Timothy 3, verse 13, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived.
A streaming Bible study. Why didn't I think of that? Now back to the guys.
We're back on the program tonight talking about God's will for us in the area of work and our attitude towards our work. What should it be? 877-381-4567. Questions at collegeu.com. God designed us to be working. It's in our fabric. It's in our design. We need to be busy working. We asked the question before the break, is work just expected of men? I think, Monty, a lot of times we focus that on men, but the scriptures are very clear that women need to be working as well.
That's right, Jacob. You know, God has given us, as we think of it, men certain responsibilities and roles to fulfill in the family, but He's also given the wife her own responsibilities and roles that need to be fulfilled. And so even though she may not be out in the public workforce, so to speak, there's still plenty for her to do at home. God's talked about the wife is to be the keeper at home, and she's to guide the house that way. And so there's lots of work for the woman to do in that regard.
All right. Proverbs chapter 31 is the famous passage about the virtuous woman. And notice some of the characteristics that she possessed, some of the things she was involved in, and it almost makes you tired just reading it. Notice what she was doing there in Proverbs 31, beginning verse 10, just highlighting some of the industry that she was involved in. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She bringeth her food from afar. Imani's thinking that may be a barbecue, but she's not bringing it from that kind of far. She's bringing her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it with the fruit of her hands. She planteth a vineyard. I mean, she's getting up before the sun even comes up to get food ready. She's planting vineyards. She layeth her hand to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. A very industrious woman here, and she's praised for her industry. Mm-hmm. It's clear that God expects women to be active just as men are.
Yeah, that's right, because when you think about this woman here and all she's done, I just think in my household, my wife has to stay pretty busy and do a lot of work just to clean up after me. And so, you know, she's got work to do. And this woman in Proverbs 31, it says she considers a field and buys. So she's looking around and finding bargains. And she's this plot of land, because she's going to buy it. And then it talks about, then she plants a vineyard on it. So even as she's bought it at a good price, then she's making it be productive after that. So she's had a lot to do, and just to getting up before daylight and providing, you know, make sure everybody's fed before they leave for work or whatever their various duties through the day are. She's taking care of that.
So she's making fabric, and she's mm-hmm. doing that from the raw material there. She's looking for the wool and the flax, and she's spinning that into yarn and thread and making the fabric from. She's a very busy woman, and it's clear from this passage and others that God expects that of women.
That's right.
Yeah, I think some would look at it and say, well, one role, a man's role or a woman's role or whatever, is more important than the other, but you see, they're both important. I mean, and so if a woman isn't going out to a job, there's still a lot of work to do, and it's an important role, taking care of the family, taking care of the household, and so both of them are important.
Yeah, Philip has chimed in the chat room. He says, notice the virtuous woman of Proverbs 31. Amen to that, Philip. Certainly a working woman that God has praised here. First Timothy chapter 5, we mentioned earlier in verse 11 beginning, talking about the younger widows that they were to be refused, for when they begin to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And with all, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. The younger women were told, you need to marry so that you have these things to do to keep mm-hmm. you busy. God expects women not to just be sitting around on the couch all day, but to be busy and industrious.
You know, when you think about it, they've got children and they're guiding the house. Two of our grandchildren spent the night with us last night, and Tina had them all day today. And I expect when I get home, Tina's going to be tired from her interaction with them all day. But, you know, raising children is a lot of work to it. It's not just I'm going to sit back on the couch and watch the little ones run and play in the yard. You have to get, they require a lot of attention, a lot of effort goes into raising children.
And our wives work a lot harder at home during the day while they're taking care of the kids, while we're out many times working for the job.
The money.
Yeah.
You know, and the guide in the house is a big deal, because it's not just something just to sit around and watch TV, but these activities that have to be done throughout the day. And basically what she's talking about, seems to me, is being a good manager of her time so that she can get these things, these duties and responsibilities that she has done. Well, in doing that, she's setting a good example. She's guiding the children and teaching them how to do that same thing. Over and over, we read Jesus talking about when he was making defense of himself, like for healing on the Sabbath, he said, well, I'm just doing what I've seen the Father do. And so our children are going to do what they see us do. Yeah, they see us sit around and being lazy, then we've taught them to sit around and be lazy. If they see us being industrious, like this Proverbs 31 woman that was reading about, she's applying herself to her various responsibilities and accomplishing them, then we can teach them just by example. Without a word, they're going to know how to do these things.
Yeah, we got time for your thoughts. Send them in the chat room tonight. Dorcas is an example for us in that, in Acts chapter 9, verse 36. Remember Dorcas, also known as Tabitha. Now, there's a Joppa, a certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and alms deeds, which she did. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died. And notice this, when Peter comes, they brought him into the upper chamber. And all the widows stood by him weeping and showing the coats and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. they were sorrowful for Dorcas because of the example and encouragement she had been to by them, by the good things that she had done, the work that she had done, the physical labor that she had done in helping care for those that were around her. That's an example for women as well as men, that we need to be busy, men and women. Well, we asked the question, what about children? Should we expect work from children? Gentlemen, have a thought on that?
Well, we've been talking about the adults, both male and female, and that they have a responsibility given by God to work. If we expect our children to do that, as they, when they become adults, then we need to teach them to do it while they're young. We shouldn't, at some magical age, 18 or 21 years old, they've sat around and done that all up till then. Now, all of a sudden, okay, you've reached the age, go work. Well, they're not going to know how. They're not going to have a clue how to do it. It's sort of like in school. I got along pretty easy in grade school without ever having to do much studying because the classes, it seemed like, was easy. Then when I got to high school and I needed to know how to study, I didn't know how to do it because I'd never done it before.
Yeah.
And so if we want our children to be successful in life, physically successful, and also spiritually successful to go along with that, then we need to expect, we're going to have to teach them to do it.
Yeah.
And so even when they're little bitty kids, I remember a few years ago when Scott Smeltzer was here and we had done a Bible study in the park and he was talking about the family relationship and there was responsibility that his three-year-old had to do, and she wasn't doing it, and she was getting punished for it. But even as young as a three-year-old, she had responsibilities. Now, hers wasn't as great as the six-year-old or the 10-year-old or the teenage child, but the child still had responsibilities. He was teaching her to fulfill them. And so that's what we've got to start with our children when they're very young, really probably from the moment of birth, and then go forward from there.
Ephesians 6, verse 4, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Part of God's will for us is that we be working, just like he doesn't want us to lie. And so we teach our young children when they're 3 years old that they didn't obey us and they want to lie about it. You know, you don't lie. Same with work. Young children need to be taught from a very early age about work, and it's our obligation to be working and be busy.
You know, I know with our small grandchildren, when they come over the house, there's a big container of toys that they get to play with, so they drag them out and they're all over the place. But when their parents get there and or decide that it's time for them to go, they say, all right, let's pick up the toys. Then they understand that part of their job at that point is to get these toys put up and back in that container, and they do it because they've been taught to.
Here's what Kent said about this. He said, God expects some type of work from all accountable individuals insofar as ability permits. He references Ephesians 4:28. Regarding women, work and caring for the home is very crucial. So I like what he says here. God expects some type of work from all accountable individuals insofar as they are able. It's a good way to put it, Kent. Thank you for that tonight. Now, last question. We're running out of time. Is my secular job unimportant? You know, a lot of times, maybe, Josh, someone might feel guilty because, I'm not a preacher. I got to go to this 9-to-5. Think of all the things I could be doing for the Lord if I didn't have this job. Is our secular job unimportant?
Well, we've already made the point a little bit that when we work, even in a secular job, we're working for the Lord. We're showing a good example. We might be able to have an opportunity to teach others in our workplace if we're there, and we're, you know, and it's sort of like Jesus. You know, so we're supposed to be in the world, but not of the world. He had to go to where the people were in order to teach them. And so, yeah, I may not be a preacher, but when I'm in the workplace, I've got opportunity to be a good example by working, but I've also got opportunity to interact and teach others.
Ephesians chapter 6, verse 8 says, when you're doing your work, you're doing it as unto the Lord, not unto men, knowing that whatever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether it be bond or free. On my secular job, I'm doing the Lord's work.
That's right.
So there really is, the idea of a secular job is not something that's taught in the Scriptures. When I'm at work, whatever that may be, digging ditches, cleaning the bathrooms, I'm working for the Lord. I'm doing the Lord's work.
Well, something we need to think of, you mentioned some people say, well, I'm not a preacher, so I'm not really, my job doesn't amount to nothing. Well, in Ephesians 4:11, says he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. Well, he gave, when we think of it as our work, everybody can't be the preacher. Some of us don't have the skills, right, the aptitude, or whatever to be a preacher. But I can go to work and I can earn a living. And when I contribute to the Lord's work on the first day of the week by being commanded, that helps to support preachers, and we can support when we do that. I might not can be the preacher, but I can help the preacher by contributing my share of the money so that he can do his job.
There you go. Matthew 10:42, and whoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. We do our secular work as unto the Lord we're serving in, but with the proceeds of that work, we're doing the Lord's work. So is my secular job unimportant, something I should be ashamed of or somehow look down on? No. My secular job is very important. I'm working for the Lord when I'm working on my secular job. All right. We are out of time. Any comments, Kyle, from you?
No, kind of going along with what Josh was saying about, we're at work and we have the opportunity. I think if we are behaving like a Christian should, and we're working and we're not griping and we're just working hard, hitting it, we're going to be Christians are called to be, we're peculiar people. So we're probably going to stand out at work anyway, based on our peculiar behavior of not complaining and working hard. And
yeah.
So I think that should be a good opportunity for us to set an example. And if others ask, why are you just, you're always quiet. Why are you always so quiet? Why are you always
why are you working so hard?
It's a great opportunity for you to, to say, why I behave this way and why, it's a good time to evangelize. Thanks.
All right. Good. Thank you for being here tonight, Kyle, to help us get on the air. Monty, thank you for your time, your good
thank
comments.
You, Jacob.
Josh, as well, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly, it's important to be working, have the right attitude towards it. The scriptures are very clear on that. Hope that things we've said tonight have been helpful to you and your life, and we hope you make plans to be back here this time next week for another edition of the Virtual Bible Study. In the meantime, we encourage you to put God first in your life. Study His inspired word of the Bible and live by it every day. You'll never regret it.